kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you. We're starting off the way we usually do. Pernell Vaughn, how are you doing?
I'm getting drenched. Very drenched. Stupid wind, stupid rain. And it's only happening when I need to step outside. When I'm not outside, everything wants to be copacetic and cool. I open the door, thunder strikes. I can't plan anything without the knowledge that Mother Nature is stalking me. With the intent to drench with reckless abandon. It doesn't even care anymore. It's been like a constant thing today. But I did end up going out, ran a quick errand, which is annoying. Like, it was one of those moments where it's just doing online retail a favor because I went to the store's website. They said they had this product in stock at the store. I went there. Lady goes to her manager's like, nope, we don't have it. I'm like, well, why is your site say that you have it? Well, we can't find it. Okay, whatever. It's okay. I accept it, though it still sucks.
That's the answer. Not they don't have it. They can't find it.
They can't find it. Exactly. And yet they didn't think to go on there and change it to not available. It still says available for pickup. I'm like, well, clearly someone screwed the pooch.
What were you looking for?
There's a card game called Custom Heroes. It's a... like a trick-taking game, but you sleeve the cards to add a different property to them. So, like, even though you might be able to say, hey, this is a 4, which should be the 3, if someone plays a 5, so you can't use the 4 anymore, you might have an ability on the card that says, well, this is lower. You can use this along with this chip to beat that card. So it's like it's a modifiable trick-taking game. It sounds pretty cool. So as a consolation prize, I went and bought that Crystal Crisis game because it was like a Best Buy, like right across the street. I was like, well, I wouldn't have driven all the way out for nothing, gotten drenched. So it was nasty out there. But that's been my day pretty much. But how about you?
I've been trying new sodas again.
Oh, God, no. No. What's new? What are they even making anymore?
Well, Pepsi just released a line of sodas kind of taken after Diet Coke with their special flavors.
Uh-huh.
Now they have Pepsi. Not Diet Pepsi, just regular Pepsi with mango juice, with lime juice, and with blueberry juice.
Ooh, that's dangerous for me.
I tried the mango and the blueberry. They're good, but they taste a lot more juicy than soda-y, if that makes sense.
Yeah, does it feel less carbonated too?
A little. A little bit less carbonated, but it's still soda, so...
Yeah, it still gets the job done. I've been fighting soda so hard, and it sucks. I went to the store yesterday even and did some grocery shopping, and the whole Coke lineup was there, single-serve cans available for purchase. Ooh. Now. I'm like, crap, that's perfect for me. I'm thirsty now. I want a drink. And he's like, don't do it. You haven't had a soda in like 2 months. Just run away. And I'm even scratching at the neck. Like, got any more of that Coke there, buddy? You know, just a taste. Yeah.
And you're asking for actual Coke, not cocaine.
Not cocaine, unless they're putting it back in the can.
Rock on.
Well, they are talking about bringing back the new Coke. Maybe that's going to have some cocaine in it. I don't know. I never had new Coke back in the day.
But me neither. I want to try ordering that. Apparently, it's just going to be a mail order only thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, weak sauce. They should just put it in the damn store.
Yeah, maybe. I know.
Maybe they're going to be afraid and realize that, you know, people in the 80s know what the hell they were talking about. And new Coke was actually good. And we let a good thing slip by.
Maybe.
That's actually what ends up happening. Because you know how people are. If they're familiar with a product, they don't want to try something new. They want the old shit. And yet, you look at this can, it's like, we actually took care in this. We put actual cane sugar in this can. And we put a little cocaine in it, you know, just to make you feel buzzy. You know, make you feel alive when you drink our soda. People are like, you know, the old Coke was better. I felt less alert when I drank that. And quite frankly, I like artificial sweeteners and whatever. Give us old Coke. Like, dude, we gave you pure Colombian snow. It's in the Coke. Nope. Don't want it.
Oh, Jesus.
Shameful. And now people are going to get hooked on New Coke in 2019. And Coca-Cola's not going to know what to do with themselves. Like, we could have had Pepsi on the ropes. But nope, we weren't thinking. We went back to old Coke. And then we'll see. Yeah, of course, at that point, Pepsi will be like, now, Pepsi addict. I don't know what the hell they would call it. Just flat out tell you. They don't even hide it. You'll be addicted to this drink. Pepsi addiction.
Pepsi addiction.
Pepsi A.
Hey, it can't be any weirder than the new Mountain Dew that's out.
I thought that was a joke label. Does it actually have quote unquote 50 flavors in it?
Allegedly, it's called Liberty Brew. I don't know what the flavors are that are in here, but it tastes like a sweet tart.
I'll tell you what the flavors are. Some guy just kicked over all the vats into one bigger vat, and then whatever combination came up flavor-wise is what you got. When the vat was full, they stopped pouring and say, here's Liberty. Pour a bunch of shit into a giant container, and when the container was full, whatever ratio came out of that, that's it. We don't even know. It's done. Maybe it's like a giant reservoir or something. The old new reservoir around back. It just like filled it up. And once that reservoir is empty, they're out of Liberty Brew.
Maybe. That's very possible. And that's not the only new Mountain Dew that I found either.
What is it? Also like Communist Brew?
No. KFC has their own Mountain Dew now.
Chicken flavored Mountain Dew.
No, it's peach and honey. And it is fantastic. It's called Sweet Lightning.
Where the hell is the chicken?
On the plate next to the soda.
How KFC gonna have a soda and not have any chicken flavor in it?
Chicken flavored Mountain Dew.
We need adventure back in beverages, man. Thought the honey lightning is kind of interesting, but KFC is named on the bottle. I want chicken in that thing. Buffalo Mountain Dew. Oh yeah. I'm in. I am. Not since the days of Joneses have we had someone go on the limb for food tasty sodas.
Jones has had some fucked up sodas. Didn't they have like a turkey and gravy soda before?
They had a whole Thanksgiving dinner. It was turkey, mashed potatoes and gravy, green bean casserole, fruit cake, cranberry, and like one other thing that's eluding me right now. And then they had another Christmas dinner that had poached salmon.
Jeez.
They went to town, and I drank all. They were disgusting. They were gross. I had one friend. We did like a little sample taste test together where I poured a bunch of it into like individual cups for each of us to consume. And, of course, none of us liked any of them but the fruitcake. And I was trying to drink the entire bottles because I spent the money. I was like, I got to finish what I paid for. This is my money. And she took every bottle away from me and poured them. Just like, what are you doing? She's like, this shit ain't meant for human consumption. I'm gonna let you do this to yourself. Just let it go.
Let it go.
Mashed potatoes and gravy soda. Let it go. Let it flow.
I would try mashed potato soda. I would.
It was very buttery and salty.
Really?
Yes.
Weird.
I had to give them credit for trying to even pull it off. And yet at the same time, there's also a part of me that wonders, did they really try? Like, did you actually try to infuse turkey meat flavor into this bottle? Because I'm not tasting turkey. I'm tasting salt. It is gross. Like, cause I mean, think about it. Logically speaking, the things that make soda soda outside of the sugar are carbonated. It's carbonated water. That's basically it. As soda at its base form is carbonated water. So it can even just take, I don't know, fucking gravy. Just take a pot of gravy, boil it to cook it up, set it aside, and then blend it with carbonated water and refrigerate it. Will it taste good? I don't know. Probably not.
Oh, jeez.
It'll taste like carbonated watered down gravy. But you can be sure that it is literally gravy plus soda. That is all it is. Meanwhile, how would you infuse the turkey? I guess you could put like take a food processor to a turkey and grind that bad boy up, grizzle and all, till it's like a gelatin.
Blend that bitch up.
Put it in a pot, heat it up to get it even more jellified, add the water, boil it down, refrigerate it, put it in a bottle, count your damn blessings and hope you don't die. But again, you'll know it is literally nothing but magic bullet turkey and boiled carbonated water. Which, now I think about it, would boiling carbonated water kill the carbonation?
I don't know. It might.
I think it would. Revised recipe. All right. So boil the food first. Maybe even put some normal water in with the turkey so it can have some water to go with the jelly. Then just add it to cold carbonated water after you let the turkey kind of cool down a bit. Then refrigerate it. Then drink it. And then call a priest.
And then cry.
Well, the priest will take care of you. I mean, he won't let you die. He'll bless you and ask God for forgiveness for the fact that you had no idea what the hell you were doing. Forgive my child father, for he doesn't know what the hell he do. He doesn't understand. Some things weren't meant to be blended. And I'm like, no, devil didn't even make me do it. I'm just a curious man. I do what I want. Devil wants a taste of my concoction, not the other way around. But I don't know. I'm wild, and I want to drink carbonated turkey again. That's just the reality of it. I want carbonated Kentucky Fried Mountain Honey Lightning in my mouth with chicken. It needs to happen. Could happen. And if I find a soda, that might be why I might be. That might put me back on soda for a temporary time, for a limited time only. Honey Lemon, Honey Lightning, Mountain Dew. But I'm gonna get some KFC in that bad boy. See what happens. God have mercy on my soul.
At least you have goals.
Oh, I have goals, all right. I'm going to make real better. I'm going to get adventures on this bad boy. I mean, like, even pizza. I mean, how long has it been since the Ninja Turtles were a cartoon? Like, the original one, not all the newfangled ones? Eons ago. Mid-90s, early 90s is when the original run dried up. Why is no one selling, you know, chocolate and marshmallow pizza? Why is no one selling? There was one place I came across that had a s'mores pizza, but it was delicious, but it was too desserty. It wasn't Ninja Turtle s'mores. It was s'mores, as in graham cracker, piece of crust, chocolate sauce as the sauce, and marshmallow as the cheese. Like, okay, it's tasty, but that ain't pizza. That's just a graham cracker drizzled with shit. Yeah. I want turtles. Give me what the turtles was eating, or some variant. Get wild and crazy with pizza. We got cats in 2019 still bitching about pineapple belongs on a pizza. Meanwhile, there's a world of taste adventure waiting to be discovered. It's the truth. I mean, when this episode is done, just go into your cupboard, go into your freezer, and look at everything in there, and you ask yourself, how many things have never been on a pizza, but really could be? What could be, Joe? What could be?
What could be?
What could be? Delicious. I want to know. I want to go on this quest. And some pizza joint needs to freaking do it instead of just finding new places to shove cheese.
Oh, Lord.
Now we put cheese. We stuff the box with cheese.
Got to stuff everything with cheese, man.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure some places done. It's like, you can't recycle the box, so we just stuff some cheese in there. Eat pork when you're done. Say good for the environment. Actually, why hasn't that happened? Edible pizza boxes.
Because then people would be touching it and you would be eating it.
Well, make them wear freaking gloves. I mean, they touch the pizza, right? Only thing I would want to get touched is like, okay, here's how they would do it. You gotta develop those stupid, like, thermo bags for, like, Domino's. Like, now the pizza stays piping hot. How about sanitary bags where when you shove the pizza inside, only thing they can be touching is other pizza or sanitized sides. Nothing more, nothing less. You use gloves to handle the pizza when it goes in to make you feel comfortable, and the delivery guy's carrying it to your door, bring it in the house, eat the whole damn box. Eat everything.
I mean, technically, if you really wanted, you could eat the box now.
Yeah, you could, but then...
It'd take a while,
coming in and going out, but it won't taste very good. You'll regret it later.
Yeah.
I'm saying go all in. Make this thing delicious. Flavor it up. It can be done. It would be great. And just imagine how much you can make on it. You'd be a pioneer. This is the type of innovation pizza delivery has been waiting on for years. Furthermore, you could even say that the concern being, you know, what about other people touching your food? Okay, the pickup only.
There you go.
It would entice people to come get their own damn pizza, too. Like, I mean, on one hand, I can get delivered, but come on, I want to get a box I can eat. Let's go.
Dine in only.
That's right. Eat everything. Eat the box. Eat the pizza. No waste. No waste at all.
You're making me hungry, Purnell.
That's my job. That's what I'm here to do. Make you hungry by suggesting outlandish products.
But that's not what you're here to do. Should we do what you're here to do? It's been almost 20 minutes.
Holy crap. I'm sorry. I apologize. But yes, we should do that.
You get on a rant and I can't stop you. It's just too good.
And the best part about it is it's never planned. Ever. It's never planned. It's like, okay, well, the only thing I can think of that can be remotely planned is the actual review. It's like, how you doing, Purnell? Here we go. I got to blow up now.
How's it going, Purnell? Well, let me talk to you about edible pizza boxes.
It needs to come to existence. It needs to come into fruition. It will be delectable.
You need to accept edible pizza boxes as your Lord and Savior.
Damn right you should. If that was my Jehovah's Witness coming to the door, I'd let him in for coffee.
Oh, my God.
So delicious.
All right. You ready to start talking about games?
Let's pow-pow.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Lapis Cross Labyrinth, developed by Nippon Ichi Software, published by NIS America, released May 28th on the Switch and PS4 for $29.99. Stack, raid, get paid. Help a struggling town recover from bankruptcy in an age of dwindling adventuring. Plunge into the mysterious labyrinth while collecting more loot than you can ever imagine. Brunel, tell us about this one.
Well, first and foremost, I can tell you that stack, raid, and get paid has become my mantra for the past 4 weeks now. Just run up. Man, look here, man. I got time for you. I'm here to stack, here to raid, and get paid. No, I'm just saying. That's so dumb, but I love that statement. It just feels good to say. And honestly, the game feels good to play, so it goes well with this ridiculous mantra. So, Lapis Labyrinth, what the hell is this game? So, I don't think most of the listeners have ever heard of these things called Sumsums. It's like a little Disney product. It's like these little cute dog heads that you can kind of stack on top of each other or whatever. You may have heard of at least World of Final Fantasy, though, which was an RPG that Square put out where you stacked a bunch of Final Fantasy characters as cute little heads or whatever on top of each other. Well, Lapis Labyrinth runs on the Sumsum, World of Final Fantasy, whatever, stacking concept. You have a team of four party members all stacked on top of each other. And your goal is to run through a variety of dungeons, usually like elemental or environment theme, like a forest or a swamp or ice area or whatever, crystal cavern. And you're trying to find your way to the next floor within that dungeon. The way you find your way to the next floor is there are crystals strewn about. And as you find them, you can whack them. And once you've smacked enough of them, the portal to the next floor opens up. Now, that part, nothing really special about that. That's par for the course in these kinds of games, these 2D dungeon crawler types. But what makes this game special is literally everything else. So you are a stack of four characters. That is your party. And your attack and defense is based on the combination of all of your equipment combined. So all four characters' weapons total up, that's your attack power. In addition, I believe all their equipment's like buffs and stat updates go with your character too. So you might have a sword that has like plus 20 damage to insect type enemies. And then your maid could have a frying pan, because Jesse has a really cool character class in the game. Your maid could have a frying pan that also has like a sort of like healing bonus to when you do attacks. Like you might absorb some energy from enemies when you hit them. So I believe, but I'm not 100% certain, that all that combines into your character totem pole too. And what ends up happening is as you're running around, you might find yourself in a random room. The game will stop calling counter, and monsters will just flood the damn room, and you have to take them out. And the way combat goes is you have a base attack button where you mash it, and the character at the bottom of the stack will do attacks. If you press another button, that is the special attack button. And similar to Smash Brothers, your attack will change based on whether you're hitting the special button in one of the directions on the cross pad. And lastly, there is a special button that lets you throw one of your characters from the totem pole off your head out to do one of their special attacks. So you can kind of get nutty with throwing your characters out there ad nauseum and just have them popping off special moves. If you want to use a different character in the stack as your main, you can push one of the trigger buttons, the left trigger button, I believe, and you'll switch to the next guy down the stack. And you can just keep kind of doing that until you're basically just fighting as guys you want and kicking ass. Now, there's this really cool mechanic in this game. I just call it jackpot tongue. This is not the technical term. I don't care. It's jackpot time. And what ends up happening is when you beat up enough guys, I'm not even 100% sure what triggers it. I just beat up a lot of dudes, and eventually this thing happens where screen starts flashing lights like you're at a nightclub, and every time you hit a box or an enemy, jewels just splash and fill the screen. It is sensory freaking overload. You're just running around smacking giant flashing star blocks. Gems are flying out. Hit an enemy, gems fly out. Dig down a hole to find your way out of the dungeon. Gems are flying out. And honestly, it's so much going on that half the time, you can't even tell what the hell you're doing. You might have a part of your stack that gets not KO'd because, yeah, when one of your character members runs out of HP, they get temporarily KO'd until you walk over and pick them up. But you won't know that because you're too busy losing your damn mind trying to make more gems appear. It's insane. And it is probably one of the best examples of positive reinforcement I have gotten in a game in a very long time. Because I've seen this animation sequence take place over 100 times since playing this game, and I've yet to tire of it. Whether it's from the gems flashing, or the music that plays, or that rush to set and kill one more guy before fever time runs out, or whatever they call it. It's a treat. And after you beat each set, every dungeon, it'll make like a generic boss enemy that might pop up at the bottom of a dungeon run. And when you beat him, you will get a few extra treasures, and you will get kicked out of the level. Now, at this point, the game does a thing where it will rank you based on how well you did. And based on how well you did on your dungeon run, possibly also how much of a certain thing you pick up. Because, again, there's so much happening that sometimes you don't even know what the hell you're doing. You're just doing it, which is honestly a good thing. But anyway, you'll get like a reward at the end where you'll have a certain number of keys to open a certain number of treasure chests. So you'll see three treasure chests, and each one will require a certain number of keys to open it. It'll tell you what kind of item is in it. Like, it'll tell you the type of weapon that's in there. And depending on the color of chest, you'll also be determined how rare the item is or how good it could be. And usually the better the item is, the more keys you'll have to spend to open it. So you have to weigh whether you want to dump your whole load of keys or the majority into this chest, hoping for something good, or pay like one key to one of the chests so you can get to the next load of treasure chests and hope that one of those has something better that you actually want. So it's a little bit of a gamble of trying to weigh when to spend all your reward keys and determine what chest items you open up. So let me see what else can I think of. Because there's a little bit going on in this game. So at certain points in the game, well, rewind that. No, I'll get to that in a second. So remember I said all of your gear is your stats are a combination of all of your character's equipment?
Yeah.
So each piece of equipment also comes with a cost. So say these twin daggers have a cost of 3 because they have high attack, and they may come with like 2 different skills built into the item. Well, at the start of the game, you get a maximum of 20. So that means that between all 4 of your characters, your equipment value can't total beyond 20. So you'll find yourself having to intentionally use crappier items just so you can equip your guys with everything they can get. But later on, you unlock a trader shop. And the trader shop will allow you to make various trades, like combination of money and resources that you find during your dungeon run. You can trade those in to get new buffs, like either cooler items to equip, or you can increase the cost max that you can have for your equipment so you can equip better stuff and more of better stuff, and so on and so forth. You can also even unlock new potential traits that you'll find on equipment as you're making dungeon runs. The loop that this game creates for the player is stupidly addictive. This is the kind of crap I'd expect to see from a mobile game, but done right on a console. It's very nice. It's very freaking nice. Also, you eat food. So there's a place that will cook lunches for you. Or sometimes you'll also just come across candy items. And when you have these things, you can equip them on your character. And between dungeon floors, you're able to eat one of these things to give yourself like a healing boost or like maybe increase your fever gauge or whatever, so that you can actually hold out longer, basically to extend your dungeon run. You won't need that early on, but as you get further in the game and dungeon runs are longer and the enemies are tougher, you'll probably want to start having some, you know, culinary majesty in your inventory for when those temporary breaks occur. Also worth mentioning, this game also emphasizes expediency on your run. Every floor, you only get 5 minutes to complete it. So you won't be slouching. You'll be exploring every nook and cranny, but you won't be doing it meticulously. You'll be in a rush. Because if I'm not mistaken, if you let the clock run out, the game doesn't kick you out or anything, but a giant monster haze will chase after you with instant death on the horizon if it catches you. Ooh. So you don't have time to pussyfoot around. Just find the treasure, kick some ass, hit some switches, and get the heck out of the dungeon before it's too late. And get that ranking up. Now, honestly, bad things about the game, I can't think of a ton. Because on one hand, I was going to say that the game could get a little bit repetitive because ultimately you're in a loop. You're getting new gear, equipping it on your guys, going into the dungeon, beating monsters, doing the same spiel, you know? Yeah. But at the same time, I don't think that's a bad thing in this case because I look at it as like a cool pickup and play sort of game. I wanted to go on like a dungeon run or two, beat some jerks up. Okay, I'm done. Shut it off, come back later. Also, games like Diablo were like this too. The only difference is Diablo lets you put more skills on your guys. So you might say have an Amazon that starts with like these three special attacks, but you'll buy new special attacks with skill points or something. Ultimately, yeah, you get a few new skills, but you're still just walking up to random guys, beating the shit out of them and hoping for good loot. So when you really lay it on the table, this is basically 2D Diablo in that regard. So I'm not going to fault it for that.
Hey, it works for me.
It really does. Like it's freaking swank. The next thing, though, this is also not really a detriment, just like an observation. There are 8 character classes in the game, right? Now, since you don't level up their skills and you don't even level up the characters because you start each dungeon run at level 1. So you're not even building up those individual characters on the runs. So unless you want the variety of seeing what the different characters can do, or maybe you want to put some of the equipment that you find to use on these other characters, you really do not have to ever use more than the default 4 characters you create at the beginning of the game. Like, you can just use them forever. And that's fine. It's just, there's a part of me that's like, man, I felt like I had a reason to use more of these other classes. But the only reason to use them is I just want to see what they do. Which, again, for a lot, that's all you need. Just, I use them if I want to, but I don't have to because I don't need the extra grind of, like, trying to get used to all these other characters if I don't want to. So, but my entire time with this game has been absolute bliss. Like, I cannot fault it at all. It's what I want. It's cute as a button. Running through the dungeons is a blast. Even when I can't tell what the hell's happening on the screen, this is one of those rare times where that's a plus, not a minus. It feels good just to just maul on things. And as you are playing, sometimes you will find yourself in situations where, even though you can't tell what's going on, you are kind of aware because you've gotten so accustomed to how the chaos is happening. That's almost like when people learn to see in the dark by keeping their eyes closed and staying in a dark room for a long period of time. Like, your eyes adjust. Yeah. Same logic. You adjust to the madness, and baby, it's on. Stack, raid, and get paid.
I guess the only question left is $30 on it. What do you say?
I think it's a buy. Just like I said, no going in what you're getting, which is how I described it. And it is totally worth that $30. People paid more for the same gimmick, Diablo. And, you don't see them complaining about that, so I think it works. It's a good buy.
Awesome. Sounds good.
It's delicious.
Delicious, like your s'mores pizza?
Damn Skippy. Then again, it's hard to compare to s'mores pizza. That junk was really good. I wish more local places sold it. I think this was New York where I saw it. No, it was in Chicago at one of those like crazy artisan pizza places they have out there. Damn, it's good. I miss it.
I've never been to Chicago. I should go sometime.
Definitely, even if it's just to go to Galloping Ghost.
What's that?
It's a ridiculously large retro arcade. They have everything. Damn. If you can think of a game that released in the States, and in a lot of cases Japan, they probably have it in the arcade, as long as it's not like a freaking Konami music game or something. Like, they had an End the Hunt arcade machine, which I didn't even know existed, and the marquee had an aquarium in it.
Jesus.
It was awesome. They had that some weird Sonic game, that the game that had Mighty the Squirrel and Ray the Armadillo. That game, they actually had that game there, which is a Super Sonic or something. I can't remember what the hell it was called, but they actually had it there, and it floored me that it existed at a place I could play.
Damn.
It's a great arcade. And you just pay $15 and you just walk in and play as long as you want.
Oh, then I'll take a trip to Chicago this week.
There you go. Just get on a plane or drive over there.
Just walk. I'll make it.
Use that teleporter you've been working on.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
In the basement. Ready for use.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Atelier Lelua, The Scion of Arlen, developed by Gust, published by Koei Tecmo Games, released May 21st on the Switch, PC, and PS4 for $59.99. The long-awaited fourth installment of the popular Arlen series. In this new story, players will revisit the nostalgic world of Arlen and embark on an exciting journey of alchemy together with Rorona's daughter, Lelua. These friggin' names, man.
Lelua! And keep in mind, you're not even reading their real names. You're reading what everyone calls them. They have weirder names than that.
They have weirder names?
Yeah, like Phyrexel. Like, honestly, her name is Lulua in the game, but her full name, I don't even know where they get the Lulua from. Every time they say it, I'm like, where the hell did you get Lulua from this? And it's like they translated it. This is what they said over there, too. So I don't even know. It's just, I almost imagine they just came up with the names like, I gotta call your ass something. I'm not pronouncing your stinking name. You know what? You're the Lulua man. You know, I don't like it. That's her damn fault. She can blame her for this mess. Give you a real name next time. Phyrexel.
Phyrexel. Oh, my Lord. Anyway, what is this game?
So, first and foremost, worth pointing out. So, I own the Arlen trilogy. I have played none of it. You know how that goes with me. I buy more games than I have time or make time to play. I own every game in the Arlen trilogy, and I have played none. With that stated, you don't need to have played them to enjoy this game. Admittedly, there is a lot more to love if you played them, because there's a lot of character references that pop up that you'll recognize if you played those games. And this takes place many years later, because again, it is the main character. One of the main characters of the older games is daughter, which means minimum 16 years, you know. Yeah. But second thing to point out is a couple months ago, I reviewed an Atelier game. Actually, it wasn't an Atelier. It was just from the same franchise, but it was just Nelk and the Legendary Alchemist. And while I did like the game, the thing that made me sad was that I hadn't played an Atelier game in so freaking long, and I wanted to see where have they come, how have they progressed over the years, and give me as a review so I have an excuse to dive back in. And this game is that. So it felt good to be able to say, man, I can find out for myself where have they come in this series. And positively, that answer is they've come pretty far in a great way. This game is beautiful, and musically it is very, very appealing. But what is the actual game? Well, the way this game plays out is you are the daughter of Rorona, and your general goal is to not be a slouch for your under your mom's reputation. Like, you want to become an excellent alchemist, just like your mom is. So you're working and striving to practice to become this excellent alchemist. However, one day while romping and bomping, a book falls out of the sky and crashes onto her head, your head, her head. And it is a weird book because no one can see anything in the book but Lulua, the main character. And
interesting.
It's pretty cool, though. I like the way it works. Like, it's a goofy story, and the game itself even kind of plays on that. It's like, what the hell? How does this even make sense? But it works for the game, because what ends up happening is throughout the course of the game, various just like life situations occur, and you have to ultimately resolve those things. And usually that falls under the magic of alchemy or making use of this cool book. So how does this work exactly? So let's say, for example, let's go with early in the game. So guy comes in your store, wants you to make a product. You have no idea how to make this damn product. You've never heard of it, and you're still a fledgling. The book does a thing, and magically now the book is giving you information on how to make this product. But it doesn't just tell you. Instead, it does this cool little puzzle thing where it kind of shows you pages of a book and it describes what you need to do, but it leaves some things out and replaces them with cryptic clues. So you'll have to figure out what they mean, answer those things, and the book will fill in the blanks and say, okay, you figured it out. And now as a result, what will end up happening is you'll either unlock a new location, you'll unlock a new recipe for alchemizing things, or both, honestly. And it's honestly a lot of fun. So what ends up happening is, like, you end up coming across the situation. The book will get popular. It's like, okay, this, you can go to this place. It's known well. It's known for its nice fauna and flora or whatever, and fight this type of monster for its, known for its fur. And from there, you're like, okay. And in the context of the game, it makes sense. Whereas I'm telling you, like, what the hell is this dude talking about? But while you're playing the game, it actually makes sense. You're like, oh, okay. They mean the spring garden, and I can fight this weird, like, little furry rabbit thing, get its fur. And as you do it, the book will fill in the blanks and give you a reward. So as you're doing this, you're fulfilling objectives. Sometimes you'll also take on quests for the guild, or the bar, rather, which will allow you to also get, you know, more rewards from, like, either alchemizing products or killing monsters or just basically helping people. Now, the thing I like about the quests also, and then I'll go into the alchemy in a little bit, is that, let's say, for example, one of the quests in the bar will say something like, hey, we need you to give me this healing potion because I've been really sick and I would like to get better. I'll take one healing potion, please. Well, you can just give them a potion if you want and get a reward, but through the magic of alchemy and the alchemy system that the game incorporates, you'll get a better reward if you work harder to make them a better quality health healing potion. So don't just give them a bunch of like trash ingredients you found behind the dumpster at the Walmart. Instead, you want to actually go out of your way to find high quality potent ingredients to make them a high quality potent healing potion, which will give you more money as a result for your reward. But now, how does that work? How do you want to go about trying to make these good ingredients or these good products for these quest rewards? Well, that's where alchemy comes into play. As you play this game, whether you're running around town, walking around a general environment or area, there are tons of items for you to pick up. And the game makes it clear what you're able to interact with and pick up. Like if there's a fishing spot that you can fish with once you've got a rod and bait, it'll be like a large pool in a lake. You walk up there and fish. If it's a rock you can pick up, it'll glimmer in the ground. So you know, go to Glimmering Rock, I can pick that up, so on and so forth. And as you pick up and access all these things, you can take them all back to your atelier. And then you go up to the actual cauldron that's there, and you can mix and match and combine these items based on recipes that you know to make products. Now, as you the recipe will just say something like, need four parts water, one part grass, and two parts, like shell or something, right? So you might have picked up a bunch of different types of water. Could have picked up some fluid from a gel monster, which is actually a water-based monster. So now you have that water. You might have water from a well that you just collected. All of those things have different levels of quality and different properties to them. And when you go to the cauldron, and I swear to God, when I tell you that this is less complicated than the sound, but this is how it goes. When you go up to the cauldron, you can combine those things. And based on the general area level of quality you put into the product, that determines how good your product will be when it comes out. There's also elemental properties you can transfer, where the more of a certain element that each ingredient will have elemental properties. So like whether it be fire, ice, lightning, or earth in varying degrees. And as you combine them, if you have enough of the right type of elements, you'll get sub properties like additional damage can be done if it's an attack item, or additional healing if it's a healing item. Area of effect can be expanded on, things like that. Or if it's equipment, like weaponry, you might get, MP leeching, which means that you steal MP from monsters when you beat them over the head with your shovel, or things like that. So there's a lot that goes into just trying to play around with the alchemy system and getting it right. And that is a large part of the game, which I honestly enjoy quite a bit. There's even combat in the game, but the combat, while fun, it's not an extreme. It's almost like it's just there to kind of fill a void. Like, people want to beat up monsters sometimes instead of just running around collecting things. The game gave you that option. But combat, while fun, isn't going to be anything you want to write home about. You get three basic characters. They have normal attacks and normal special attacks. And when you're in combat, you're basically beating the monsters, doing damage back and forth, and hoping to win. However, in addition to your three front characters, you also have two support characters whose purposes are to have attacks triggered by what the front characters do. So you might, say, have a character use a special attack, but that character triggers the support character in the back that will follow up attack to do more damage. In addition to that, there is another system in the game called the Interrupt. And what that is for every alchemist-type character you get, like Lulua, the main character is an alchemist, and you'll meet other alchemists that will join your party. For every alchemist you have in the party, they are able to use items. Normal characters can't. And with the interrupt system, you can equip a specific item where if you've had enough turns in battle, you will be able to then use the interrupt to just stop combat whenever you want and use the item that you equipped for that character to pass around. So if you need like a clutch heal, boom, healing salve, I'm holding it. Drink this shit, feeling better. and it works out pretty well. If anything, it makes certain things a lot easier than they would be otherwise because healing matters. And while combat isn't brutal or anything like that, I wager putting it on a hard difficulty, which, unlike my usual shtick, I did not do this time. But I wager hard mode would likely give you the challenge that you might want in combat. This game is very fun. It feels more like a slice of life type game than a game with pressing stakes and concerns, which is kind of rare these days for an RPG or even a JRPG. But the world is always at stake. People are always stressed out. Whereas in this game, it's goofy junk like helping townsfolk and keeping your shop from being shut down. Slice of life thing. There's even like PA events where you can come across characters in the game and just like have general conversations about their lives and how things are going. Weird, wacky events. And all the characters are so expressive. I really like this game. It feels good to play. Like, it genuinely feels good to play. And while I can't necessarily compare it against the older games, like, say, the recent Arlen trilogy, per se, because I haven't played them, I can say that as a person who is familiar with the series, but it's practically new because of how long it's been since I've played one, this feels like a good entry point for people to get back into the series or just to start anew. Like, you can just pick this game up. And like I said, yeah, you won't pick up all the references, like, who the hell is Rorona? But you will still be able to get understanding of them within the context of this game. And that's enough. Because if you're not running around the series, what do you care what they did in previous games? And if you like this game enough to go back and play the old ones, then it'll kind of feel like a prequel you're playing.
There you go.
So it's not even a bad thing.
Well, then overall, $60 on it, what do you say?
Hopefully I did a good job describing this crazy game, but I would say it's totally worth your money. It's an enjoyable time. This is a pickup. Have fun with, smile while you're doing it, put it down, and come back and play it later and continue the story kind of game. Oh, and worth mentioning also, if you left the series because of time constraints, as in the game forcing time constraints on you, that does not exist in this game. You don't have to worry about chasing the clock, the beat deadlines, or anything stupid like that, which makes it even more relaxing than previous entries were.
Which is good to hear. I hate when games impose time limits on you.
I agree. Like, there's certain times where it will work, but most of the time it's put on there as a dumb constraint. Like, play Persona 5, and you're like, hey, I want to eat this burger. Somehow eating a burger takes all freaking day. No, it doesn't. I'll get the burger to go. When Morgana's telling me to go to bed, I'll eat the burger and go to sleep. Boom. Takes no time. But no, the game has to come up with this false sense of time usage. Like, no, this is dumb. I can do tons of things together. I hate when games block you out of things by arbitrary time constraint. But if it makes logical sense and I don't feel like I'm truly missing out on something, it doesn't bug me too much. But it's very rare, I think, a game pulls that off effectively. It's very rare.
Oh, well. Well, you got one more game to talk about. That is called Super Cane Magic Zero.
We don't have time. Joe.
We have to have time.
That is true. We do have to have time. And for Super Cane, I can do that. Please continue.
All right, Super Cane Magic Zero, developed by Studio Evil, published by Intragames, released May 30th on the Switch, PC, and PS4 for $24.99. Super Cane Magic Zero is a comedy action RPG. It features a large handcrafted game world full of secrets to explore. In addition, randomly generated dungeons and local PvP arenas. Fight solo or local co-op, get gear, eat bombs, crawl ridiculous dungeons, and kill all the vegetables. Purnell, what the hell are they talking about?
I think they mean where to bulls. Let me stop. Anyway, now that you've named all the games I have to review tonight, I can safely say that this episode's theme for me has been playing feel-good games. Literally every game I've played this episode makes me feel really good. This game is another one like that. It is stupid and stupid, but I mean that in a good way. So the premise of the game is that a wizard died and a dog became a magic dog and caused chocolate moons to fall from the sky and vegetables to become weartables, which, for the record, when the game would say weartables for a while, I thought they were saying weartables. Four-legged monsters running around, like eating monstrous furniture running around. That's why I was misinterpreting it. But obviously when I saw my first like tomato man running around with a pitchfork clicked. But yeah, so basically all these calamitous events are happening. And then your main character just happens to crash into Earth as a comet and then gets arrested. And it's freaking weird, okay? I have trouble even explaining it. The king of the world says no more law, and then you get released from jail and stuff happens. Weird. You go to a place called Pop-Tarts. All right. So this game was clearly written by a comedian, and it shows because this is a very hysterical game. I openly laughed out loud multiple times. Sometimes because it's just a dumb joke that's so dumb I couldn't help but to laugh at it. He's still doing his job. And then other times because just some genuinely funny statements came up in the game. So this game is also kind of like a Diablo-esque game. It runs on the twin stick style where the idea is you're running around. Left stick determines the direction you're attacking and left stick determines your movement. And you are running around the map beating things with a stick or a tomato rod or a faucet. Whatever you're holding as a weapon at the time. At the beginning of the game, you can choose from one of four classes, others of which can become unlocked later in the game as you play. And those classes have they kind of default stat build outs, like, you know, how proficient they are with hit points or attack or defense. And they also have one bonus, like, ability. Like, the character I used, their class was the plumber. I don't know why they were plumber, but whatever. And their ability was like a sonic bark, where when I pressed the button, they would shriek and everyone around them around me would take damage. So you pick this character and you start this weird game. Now, oddly enough, one of the big traits about this game, two things actually, are two major components to this game make it unique in this style of game. One, you can eat everything that you can find. And I literally mean everything. If you find a box with meat in it, you can either throw the box of meat at the wall, which will then allow it to burst and all this meat will fall out. And if you eat the box of meat without breaking it, you'll get sick and take damage and hit points or whatever. But you can eat the box. You can eat a bomb. It will kill you, but you can eat the bomb. You can eat pretty much anything that's available to be picked up. Healing, hurting, whatever. And they always give you some sort of trait or property. There's a weird roulette where the game says that you can only have the trait or properties of two food items you digest and the rest will get kind of bumped off. But I was so busy just eating things, I sucked at even keeping track. And I just ran around beating things up. I didn't even care. The other thing is the aforementioned throwing that I mentioned. So unlike a lot of games like this, I honestly, at least personally, feel like this game was designed with throw being a heavy to main mechanic. So yeah, you can beat guys with your weapons, but ultimately what you want to do is knock guys down, pick them up, throw them into other guys, or throw them at the wall itself, or pick up a bomb and throw it at the guy, or whatever. Because I feel like I always did more damage by just hurling guys at various things. And that's fun. I actually enjoy running around picking up crap and hurling. As you're running around the game, the artwork is very cartoony. The music is very cartoony. In fact, I have been listening to a particular track from the game ad nauseum for the past few days. It's stupid infectious. And I swear, I have to get it on R&P somehow. I just got to figure out what the hell the topic will be. But it's getting played. I love the music that much. The characterization, again, you're not going to play this game looking for deep character moments. Like, again, you're looking for the main game's plot, like I mentioned earlier about the dog casting magic and causing calamity, is you're ultimately trying to save the world from this magic dog. But he's currently holding up in a castle with a strawberry on top, atop a large mountain, and you have to find the six weird wizards to get you in, like the peanut butter and jelly wizard and like the potion wizard and Master Biscuit, the biscuit man. Weird shit. As you beat enemies, you'll collect two forms of currency as well. Salami, as in the actual meat, and biscuit, as in dog biscuits. After you get to a certain point in the game, you can spend dog biscuits to have buildings rebuilt that were destroyed by the chocolate meteors that were falling from the sky. And once you have them rebuilt using kibble or dog biscuits, you will then be able to utilize their services. And there's a variety of different services you can make use of. There's like shops that open up as you buy weapons, accessories, and gear. And there's other random bits too. But for the most part, kibble, it takes a lot to revive these places. You're not going to just like show up at the stop and like, hey, I'm going to rebuild everything. No, it's going to take time. Trust me on that. But it took me a while. So it's better than I even say what's in all of them. Just be like, hey, you could open these things up and cool things will happen when you do. I feel like some places in the game are randomized and other places are not. So while randomization will factor in, it's not, if you're not a big fan of randomizing, don't worry about it. It's only sometimes. And I think that's because it factors into the puzzles in some place. Like there's like one particular location where it's randomized, but there's also some instructions the game will tell you, like, okay, if you can pull these things off, you'll get the hell out of this random forest. And it's like, how the hell do I get myself out? I don't understand the rules, what the main character will say, but you just do it anyway. But, it's weird to say how this game works because I felt certain things about it. Like I felt that attacking was a little slow. Like even though the attack has like a speed rating like between A and C or D, I still was like, man, I wish my attacks were faster. But it wasn't a deal breaker. I just ended up looking for weapons that had a speed attack of A. I liked finding all the weird wacky gear, like the picnic basket that would make fruit shoot out so I could eat the fruit, or a bag of potatoes so I could just eat the chips. But throughout the entire time I was playing the game, I had a solid time. It was a fun time. Though I will say, I guess one potential complaint would be that due to the nature of how the game plays, like I mentioned earlier, you can't attack guys, but you're mostly going to be throwing dudes. There are moments in the game where a large amount of enemies will just pop up in like one of the arena rooms you end up walking into. And you got to beat these guys but one of them might have a gun that fires three bullets that explodes, and another guy might just be very quick with stabbing at you with his hammer or pitchfork, and you're trying to find your way in and start juking and getting things done, and you ultimately just find yourself going, crap, I'm running around the arena looking for things to throw at these guys to try to find myself an opening. And that could take a little bit of time if you come across moments like that.
Yeah.
Deal breaker, but worth stating, because I could picture somebody being like, you never said anything about that. What the hell? But honestly, this was another case where, as I played it, it started out with me going, oh, this is kind of stupid. I'm going to regret taking this review on them all, I'm sure. That by the end of the first world or the first area, I changed my mind, and it was like that. It was like, this is good.
Nice.
Game, it's fun, and I'm enjoying it. I'm talking to a damn pastry man, and I'm laughing, and this is good. There's a dungeon that you come across early on where you have to light your way with a lantern, but there's a lantern dispensing machine that you can pay money for to get more lanterns. So you can make a pack of lanterns if you want. Just kind of light your way through the entire dungeon without having to carry the lantern around with you. And then, of course, you could throw a lantern at a monster and do damage to them, too.
Beautiful.
This is one of those games where I know I've said this a lot on the show. This is one of those games where if I didn't get a review copy, my instinct would have probably been not even to bother with this game, because it didn't stand out to me. But getting the code and getting a chance to experience it for what it has to offer beyond, AAA Circus or whatever that the rest of the game, all these games are being pumped out. This game offers some really cool humor. It offers colorful graphics and a very lighthearted atmosphere that you don't get too often. It offers salami as a currency. I can't state that enough, how the idea of using salami for money is just ridiculously stupid, and I love it for that.
You're making me hungry for salami.
And kibble!
Yeah.
And kibble.
Yeah, dog biscuits would be awesome right now, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot to mention also, skill trees. So, as you level up, various points in the game, stuff will happen, like story events will occur or whatever. And in the event those story events occur, you'll unlock a new skill tree. So, for example, the earliest one is a guy tells you, well, you fell from the sky and left a crater. That means you're clearly a comet. And your character goes, I am a comet. Holy crap. And then your skill tree goes, the comet tree, because you are clearly a comet. And then it'll give you access to like two branching paths from there, and you can spend ability points to open them up. Downside to this, unfortunately, is that there's not much in the form of actual skills that exist on it. It's more like stat bumps. Think like the Final Fantasy X sphere grid, only without most of the actual attack abilities that it gave you. Just, hey, you go here, your mana goes up by 10, and your power level goes up by this, and vice versa. You can kind of determine what kind of build you get. And there's like certain like little perks at the end of some of them, like a defensive shield that goes in that prevents damage from all the different elemental types, that kind of thing. But I was looking for more like, hey, here's this cool attack, but really your attacks are mostly coming from the gear you find. So, but it's still fun to like unlock a new thing. Like, oh, wow, now I understand dog genesis. Whatever. What is that? Don't ask me, but it's a thing that exists in this game's universe, dog genesis. And that's just more skills you can unlock and more stats you can tweak on your character. And eventually you can destroy, like, I think I ended up working towards destroying chocolate walls, because there are walls made of chocolate and they are very hard.
Of course they are.
Very hard. They're stale chocolate walls. But even with the fact that I'm not unlocking a ton of attacks or anything like that, I still do find myself enjoying the drive to say, hey, I want to unlock these stats and get this guy bolstered up in this way. So I'm going to focus on building these up. And then when I unlock a new skill, just like, have I hoarded any points? You're damn right I did. Maybe I can just jump right in on one of these and just get some good points or new skill, or new skill, but better stats that are like more fitting than the last tree offer, something like that.
Yeah.
So, but I'm trying to think, is there anything I may have missed on this game? I said a lot of wacky things, but as the passive listener, do you find yourself going, what about that one odd component, Perna? What about that?
No, I just really, really want this game because it sounds ridiculous, and I love ridiculous.
I agree. And it's honestly worth stating that ridiculous is hard to do in games, I think. Like, if done wrong, it just comes across as being really dumb and cheesy. But I think this game pulled it off because it's not dumb cheesy. It's stupid cheesy. And I love stupid. I can barely even outright describe it properly, but it's like humorously dumb. Like, you'll see a comment come up at the beginning of the screen where it's like the key to winning is actually winning. And It's such a dumb statement, and an obvious one at that, but it's funny to read in the game. One thing said, if you come across a magic blue saber, you're most likely playing the wrong game because it's not in this one. And I laughed at that. I was like, wow, this is stupid. And I love it for that. But it's like humor like that. And again, the magic dog dropping chocolate moons. Like, it's just, you know what you're getting from the very start. And like, there's one statement at the very beginning of the game when they're telling the story that it's not a big thing. It's just a funny thing. And I don't even want to spoil it by even saying what it is. But I laughed hard at just them doing that even. This game feels good to play.
Nice.
It's stupid. The music is great.
I love the visuals.
Yes. The character I made has a old beat up top hat on, green skin, red eyes, a weird like sausage bandolier, and straw pants. And she's carrying around a stick with a tomato on the end, but my sub weapon is a water gun that fires like three splashes of water across the screen that leaves like toxic puddles.
Nice.
It's good. It's stupid and it's good.
It sounds fantastic. So Studio Evil Intragames, if you're listening, why are you leaving Xbox out?
If you can, bring it to Xbox. It's more sales. And also, I didn't even mention the battle arena because I was playing single player, so I couldn't even do that. But for couch co-op, couch co-op in the main game too, but you can do like an arena battle multiplayer on the couch, choose a bunch of different arenas and there's different conditions, like one hit kill rods, like the golden gun thing. Nice. And just like a bunch of like random, like wacky stages and different like buildups on those stages. And I just looking, I was like, man, I wish I could play this with some people. This looks like it'd be fun. But it's just like, I only played the story mode and I thought it was a great time. I thought the multiplayer would just add even more to it.
Yeah. Multiplayer always adds.
Yes, it does. You can even pick up your friends and throw them at monsters.
Beautiful. I love it.
And so, there's a stat determining, you know, the heavier the character's stat is, the more damage they do when they connect. That goes for monsters, too.
Oh, God. So weight plays a factor?
Yes.
I would crush everything.
Stomp.
The only question left is $25 on Super Cane Magic Zero. What do you say?
Another definite buy. This almost feels like a shill episode because every game I did was a buy, but they all deserve it.
You had three good ones.
I have to say, I agree with you there. I feel like next episode is going, I got to come up with something stupid. If you're listening, developer, if you're making a terrible game, tell us so we can review it and I can let my palate know that there are bad games out there. But what I actually expect to happen is you're like, hey, SML, here's this really shitty game you should review. And it's like, this game is really good. They lied to us. What is the deal with this? This game is great. But like, I feel like I got really lucky that these games are coming down the pike and they always end up being good. I find something great about all of them.
Which is good to hear. It's always good when games are good because good is good.
I can good, 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 good.
Exactly.
But I feel like I do need to, like, maybe I'll write an article or something, but I got to come up with like a list of really bad games. Though I think the challenge in that is the fact also that we play, there's just so much. Like, I'm looking at my shelf right now, not even my full shelf, just my on deck shelf. And I don't make a habit of buying bad games, so I'm not going to see any bad games on that shelf. But even amongst that, there are more games on this shelf that I could possibly play within a period of 2-3 years. Easy. And we have games coming out like that, like gangbusters.
Yep.
So you almost, if you're a conscious gamer who does his due diligence, looking at reviews, listening to content before you drop your money on something, the odds of you coming across a bad game to even report it as being bad or slim to none, it won't happen. And it's an amazing time because of that. It's more about what games hit the notes that you want to experience right now and if that game is good.
Yeah, because even games you're not interested in, they're still good. They're just not for you.
Exactly. There's that one game that I always refer to it, Tokyo Dam Tattoo Girls. I will never stop referring to that as like a truly bad game. And even that probably has some intentions. When my time came, I was like, this is the one time I have to open the floodgates. This is a bad game. Here's why. But that was like a one in a million title. And I don't know, I can't recall the last game on that beyond that that I felt was like just bad. I can't.
And yeah, we've been lucky to get good games on the show.
I concur with you there. Surprising good games even happened a lot of times. Was like, this game, oh, I'm sure this is going to be a turd. It is not a turd.
Yay.
Thank you for surprising me. It's amazing. It's a good time. And I like it. And I appreciate the industry for that.
Me too.
Dun, dun, dun.
Purnell, it is always a pleasure having you on the show, chatting about this stuff at length.
We just did a whole TV show with this episode of review.
Yeah, pretty much. We're over an hour.
Yeah, this is an episode of Game of Thrones right here.
Yeah, with a better ending.
Hi-o!
Womp, womp. Purnell, any final words?
Be mindful of bad weather. Keep playing great games. And if you have any game suggestions for us or like any questions about just stuff we've been talking about, feel free to write into the show or hit us up on the Twitter and let us know.
All right, moving on. We got Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how's it going?
Hey, going all right.
How was your weekend?
I can't remember much of it, so it must have been good. We did a lot of stuff actually this weekend. For one, I finally completed a project. myself and Justin, the drummer for Gimmick, and two of the returners, Wedge and Kevin, released a video as Super High Tops, and we covered the entirety of the Toe Jam and Earl soundtrack for the Genesis.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. That's actually our featured music tonight.
Hooray!
It's you!
It's me!
It's-a-me, Chris Taylor!
Yeah.
Doesn't have the same ring as Mario.
It's a single me.
It's a single
just a one me. Anyways, yeah, so that's pretty exciting. I played bass on it, which fulfills a lifelong dream ever since, actually before I could even play bass, I wanted to learn how to play those songs. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Reception on the video has been really great so far. And I think we did really well considering it was all one take done live, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome that it was just one take.
Yeah, I kind of pushed us into that. I was like, well, it's six songs. We can just do them all, or we could do them all at once. And then I worked out some transitions with Justin and Wedge. And actually, once we filmed the video, we added in some visualizations from the game and such. So, actually made our own GIFs of like Toe Jam and Earl characters and stuff and peppered them into the video. So it's a fun watch.
Yeah, it was. It kept me entertained the entire time.
Excellent. Glad you think so. Beyond that, actually just picked up the physical edition of Crystal Crisis.
You and Purnell both bought that.
I think everybody right now should buy it because apparently stores like GameStop and stuff are getting really limited amounts in, and it's a pretty sizable box for a Switch game. It's like about the size of four Switch boxes because it comes with like a actual physical puzzle block game.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and some other stuff. I haven't even opened it up yet, but because I just got it. But I'm excited about it because one of the most important and influential figures of video game bullshittery in my life has been Johnny Turbo, and this is his video game debut. For some reason, they put the spokesman for the Turbo CD / Turbo Duo system from the 90s, the Sega CD competitor by the TurboGrafx people. They came up with this mascot called Johnny Turbo, and he's just the most ridiculous, like clearly just a middle-aged man with a beard, like with a backwards baseball hat and like Centurion's style, like, you know, robo suspenders and stuff, like beating up Faker goons, which are, you know, is meant to be Sega, and touting the superiority of the Turbo Duo to the Sega CD system. It was just an amazing, bizarre mess, and it was just through appreciation for those old comics that showed up in video game magazines that I ever ended up getting into into Austin and, you know, that whole thing in the first place.
Nice.
It's a long story.
I'm sad. I just checked GameStop, and the closest one that has it to me is 92 miles away.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that they only got the pre-orders in, so... yeah, once my girlfriend found that out, you know, I had pre-ordered it, and that my copy was the only copy her store got, and then she bought it on Amazon.
Damn.
Just to make sure that she has one, because it's one of those that it might end up going rare, because, you know, Nicholas, I guess, doesn't think that enough people know about it. And yet, here we are talking about it on the internet, so who knows?
And this is the second time, too.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because Purnell was talking about picking it up from Best Buy today, because he went to somewhere, I don't think he mentioned the store, looking for some kind of board game, and he couldn't find it, so he just stopped at Best Buy and picked up Crystal Crisis instead.
Oh, okay.
Amazon has it in stock. I might have to order this.
Good on him. Yeah, I might recommend it. I mean, the game looks cool. It's a, you know, action puzzle game, and I love those.
I love puzzle games, too.
Yeah, so... And, you know, it's got the Nicholas characters that are more well-known, such as Isaac from Binding of Isaac, and it's got the characters from Cave Story. Astro Boy is in it.
Nice.
Yeah, and... Anyways, yeah, I don't know. I haven't played the game yet, so... And I'm not here to review it.
No, you're not, but you are here to review two other things. Should we get to it?
Oh, segue. Let's roll on into that.
Yeah.
Hang on, I just unplugged my headset. All right, I'm back.
Welcome back.
Thank you. I swept my arm dramatically and unplugged my headphones.
Oh, your flair for the dramatic backfired
indeed.
On you.
Indeed.
Well, you ready to talk games?
Let's talk games.
All right, the first game you're here to talk about is called Heroine Anthem Zero Episode 1, developed by Wind Thunder Studio, published by Winking Entertainment, released May 23rd on the Switch for $12.99. Heroine Anthem Zero Episode 1 is an epic fantasy 2D side-scrolling ARPG. In a world unforgiven by God, is it a story of sacrifice and survival 10 years in the making? Come and enter a world of adventure from long ago. Chris, tell us about this one.
All right, so this is one that I requested, and so I'm very happy to be reviewing it. Heroine Anthem Zero, yeah, so this is an interesting one. For one, I actually looked up the... I hardly ever do my research, but I looked up the developer on this one, and it turns out it's a Taiwanese company that... they haven't made a whole bunch of games, but I guess this is their kind of a popular one that they started this series back in, like, 2002... And so I guess this is kind of maybe a remake of it or something like that. Maybe it's like the that Final Fantasy VII remake that's supposedly coming out in chapters. Who knows? But yeah, so this game. It is an action side-scrolling RPG. It seems to be set up in kind of a Metroidvania style. That is to say, it... allows you to basically get in over your head if you like, or if you follow the path the game suggests for you, it becomes a little bit easier and you gather stronger items and weapons and stuff in order to backtrack and then go and, you know, do the thing that you weren't able to do before. Mm-hmm. In that sense, it's kind of Metroidvania-esque, but really it just kind of plays out like an action platformer. So the first thing you'll notice in this game is that the art style is amazingly gorgeous. I can't speak enough about the, like, painted backgrounds and, like, even the title screen. It just looks, like, really, really cool. Like, every time I entered a new area, it's just, like, this new, like, digital painting that's just, like, you know, mind-blowing. And, you know, it's got the nice big sprites, kind of started to remind me of something like an Odin Sphere or, you know, one of those games where they have the large, overly elaborate sprites. But once they start moving, then they have that thing where it's basically like their arms and legs kind of move almost like a marionette style. Like, I want to call it Ernest Evans style, but that's kind of a deep cut.
Yeah.
But so, you know, it's a little bit puppet-like. In the movements and such, like they animated the arms and legs and bodies separately. It's not off-putting or anything. It's just like that's the style of the game.
Yeah.
And
and looking at screenshots, you weren't lying. Holy shit, this is a gorgeous game.
Yeah, it looks incredible, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't expect to see stuff like that, like outside of, you know, something much higher end than this game is price-wise anyway.
Yeah.
So anyways, yeah, the adventure is, you know, it follows this kid whose name I already forget. the names are very Japanese and like Japanese fantasy style names, and they're kind of forgettable. In fact, like even in the game, they mess up each other's names on purpose all the time. So nice. Clearly they're sort of making fun of themselves a little bit like that. But, you know, it's the hero boy and his fairy partner who is just shrill as hell. The voice actor goes up to 11 on this character on the reading, and I'm impressed. The dialogue in this game is spoken entirely in Japanese, and is just, you know, translated to English. but apparently they translated this to several languages, so that's kind of cool. And honestly, for something of this budget, I would not expect a full-blown English voice cast, you know?
Yeah.
Especially considering that this game has a lot of dialogue. It's actually really story-heavy, which is interesting for an action RPG. You usually don't see that. You know, epic adventure starts where we're, you know, our hero's noticing that, you know, wild animals are on the rise. He's a forest protector, which, you know, his village lies outside of the forest. And so he's charged with protecting it with some other dudes who are interesting. One of said dudes wears a very disturbingly small codpiece. So I can't, this game does have like fan servicey elements to the female characters, but I honestly can't knock it because they got a dude with a banana hammock within the first 15 seconds of the game. So
nice.
They're at least being fair.
Well, you sold me on the game.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyways, so, you know, he notices that, you know, more animals are running wild, and then the forest protector, who's like a giant wolf with a horn helmet on, you know, has gone feral, basically, whereas he was normally a more calm creature. And so after defeating him, you know, they try to get to the bottom of that. And honestly, I mean, you know, we went into town to report it and met some characters and did some dialogue. Like, I didn't even get past that point of going to the first town and telling people what actually happened to me in the tutorial dungeon for like 2 hours of the game.
Damn.
Like, it's got so much dialogue and stopping and asides and things like that. I was just like, wow. And, you know, there's this whole character introduction thing where, you know, your best friend who's a city boy has a crush on your sister, and then they spend all this time awkwardly talking and stuff. The whole way the thing plays out actually is like an episodic anime. That is to say, the game will stop completely and devote like 20 minutes of dialogue to just this one little side story. And I that's not a complaint. I actually appreciate thorough storytelling. So, but that is in an action game. That's, you know, a little bit unique. But again, I really love staring at this game. The music is also really incredible, although a little bit, compressed. So when you're listening to it, you're listening to this like beautiful orchestration and like even vocal themes and things like that. But they just have that little tinge of like, you know, bad bitrate MP3 kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, despite that, I definitely recommend not skipping the intro song. It is such a good song. It's not sung in English or even translated. I have no idea what they're saying, but it's just.
But it's beautiful.
It is. It's so good. So yeah, like basically the other thing I appreciate about this game is that, like I said, it very early on allows you to go into an area that's much more difficult than the area you're already in. And it actually allows you to play out story, and the game at least itself claims that it will change the story path if you continue along this route. And indeed, when I tried to do that and met up with another character that's introduced early in the game, I ran into a boss that was too hard to beat. So I skipped that and then went and did all the town stuff. And although I can always go back and try and get that other character, it's just like, I imagine that having that character in my party probably will change some of the storyline elements in the town. So the game's really interesting like that, in that it's like, yeah, you can branch off and change up the storyline, or just ignore it and keep going. It's whatever you want to do.
Hey, whatever works.
Yeah, and so for that reason, I'm very interested in that. I noticed this is an episode one, so I looked it up, and it turns out this game's about a 10-hour adventure. Some people complained about how brief it is, and, you know, like I said, given that I've spent 2 hours just, you know, opening up the game, only having 8 more hours after that does seem a little light. But I haven't made it to the end of the game, so I can't speak to that. But I will say that having played what I have so far, and, you know, I basically made 2 saves, one for skipping the extra character and one where I saved at that boss, and I'm trying to take down that boss. Yeah, it's like I'm definitely looking forward to episode 2 on this one. So
nice. So episode 1, $13. What do you say?
Yeah, I think that this is definitely worth it, just for the fact that it seems a lot of work and care went into this thing. I mean, a game doesn't look this good unless, you know, it's really been worked on. I really like the writing. It's the translation's not the most solid. It definitely reads like the subtitles to a Japanese anime. That is to say, sometimes things are a little too literal, and so some humor or other emotional things are lost, but I was definitely able to follow along. I really like the action. It's smooth, and again, I really love the aesthetics. I think this game's really interesting, and I think this is a great sort of way to get into the game, that is to say, introducing it a chapter at a time and making them lower priced. So yeah, I say definitely check this one out. If you look at the screenshots and, you know, and see that it looks that nice, it always looks that nice. So
nice.
Yeah, it's worth checking out.
Awesome. Sounds good. We got one final game to talk about tonight called Warlock's Tower, developed by MidiPixel, published by Rattleaka Games, released May 28th on PS4, 29th on Xbox One, coming out the 31st on the Switch, all for $4.99. A punishing puzzler with elegantly designed levels around one brutal rule. One move equals one life lost. Chris, this is the most RPG sounding title we have, and it's a puzzle game.
Yes.
Explain.
Okay, Warlock's Tower. I always like to hear the word punishing when it comes to describing a puzzle game, especially from the likes of Rattleika. I think that the most difficult games I've been given have been from them. So yeah, Warlock's Tower. So this is very much an old school style room by room puzzle game, you know, Adventures of Lolo and things like that, wherein you play the most epic role of them all. I mean, that they'll be talking about this one for decades. You play Tim the Mailman. So there's a wizard who lives in this tower, and this tower apparently drains all life from the planet and is wrecking all of the natural resources and everything like that, because the wizard thinks that everybody hates him. But actually, everybody loves him, inexplicably. So they send Tim the Mailman with a letter of appreciation and a peace offering, essentially, to the warlock. But Tim the Mailman must get to the top of the tower in order to deliver this letter. So that's what we're going for here. The graphic style is very much reminiscent of the Game Boy. It's monochrome. It's in green. I've actually seen gameplay videos where it's brown, but I didn't see that option, so maybe I just missed it. But either way, it's one color for this game. And when you enter a new room, of which, you know, there's anywhere from, you know, just a few, like 5 or 6 rooms to maybe 8 rooms in any floor, given floor of the dungeon. But every time you enter a room, You have three lives, and every step reduces those lives, you know, down to zero. And of course, when he hits zero, then he has to start the floor over because he is dead.
Yeah.
So what is the way that the game plays out is that on the floor, there are different spots, I guess kind of, I don't know, they're just circles with numbers in them. I guess they're magic crystals or something like that. But so
compressed
if you hit one
souls.
Yeah, exactly. It's some MacGuffin. When you pick up one that says three, it then adds three lives to your, or it resets your lives to three, I should say. It does not add.
Yep.
And then if you get a couple of levels in, if you get a super gem, then that will actually or it will set your lives to five, and then you can move five spaces. Now here's where it gets tricky. If you hit a super gem that gives you five spaces, but then you hit like another regular gem, then it just sets your lives to three, and thus you've actually lost two lives. So getting through the dungeons is all about mathematically figuring out where to get that next gem, but also which gems to get and in what order. Because if you go for the five gem too early, but you didn't clear out the three gems that are around it, then you're going to screw yourself and, you know, you got to start over. So it's all about basically thinking a few steps ahead, or, you know, just experimenting until you figure out what it is. And interestingly, later on, the dungeon introduces a second character that you can then control. You can switch over to, and they can do some other stuff too. So they continually add like new cool gimmicks to this game, and I really appreciate that. It's got a lot of levels, which is really nice. In fact, I would say that I could have seen the ending, but I have not. However, that's no fault of the developer, because they actually sent us a floor by floor, like, basically
solution
a cheat sheet.
Guide, yeah.
Yeah, that's like the first time I've ever gotten one of those, which is kind of great. But I opted not to use it because I had a lot of fun with this game actually teasing, you know, doing the brain teasing thing and like actually trying to figure this out.
It's a tough one though.
It is
tough quick.
It really does. You like get into places where you're thinking about 12 steps ahead of where you are currently. And I don't mean like 12 physical steps. I mean like 12, you know, I got to move here, then I got to move here, and then here, and then here, and then here, and then here. And then I can figure it out, you know.
Yeah.
Like, these get very elaborate, and I really appreciate that about this game because, it really harkens back to like those kind of games that would come out on the Game Boy, except that instead of, costing $40 and being your like one Game Boy game that you get to own for years as a kid, this game is available at a very, very low price, and you get a lot of content for it.
You do. And to touch on something you mentioned earlier with the visuals, I believe the color of the world depends on which world you're in, between like warehouse or whatever the hell the other ones are.
Okay, I knew that the music changed. I didn't notice that the visuals changed. It's honestly kind of hard to notice because, like I said, you kind of get into solving the puzzles more than anything. And in that sense, I actually kind of like that they gave it such a simplistic approach.
Yeah. But $5 on Warlock's Tower, what do you say?
$5, if you're a puzzle fan, then go for it. It's that simple. There's nothing else in it but puzzles, so if you're not a puzzle fan, then don't go for it. but this one definitely will, it scales up pretty slowly, like an entire floor is dedicated to straight up tutorials, so you don't have to worry about the game being too complicated early on. But once you really get into it, it really gets challenging.
Yeah.
But they keep adding things in that make it fresh, so I do recommend this one for any fan of the genre. It's very well made.
Awesome. It's been a good lineup this show. Five games, five buy-its.
Nice.
That is the sign of a good episode.
Heck yeah.
I should just title the episode Buy It.
Yeah. Money.
Chris, always a pleasure having you on chatting. Why don't you introduce the music one last time as your final words?
All right. So What's coming up next is the audio from a new video by my new, I hesitate to call it a super group. I mean, you know, we're just all Austin musicians who wanted to get funky, and we did. But this is a new group made up of people from Gimmick and the Returners. It's called Super High Tops, and the song is every single song from Toe Jam and Earl on the Sega Genesis, including all the bits that are just the hip-hop drum samples with bass, because we had to include those. I actually almost didn't, and then Wedge, who is the keyboardist for this group, insisted that we do it every time. So this is going to have me on the bass and some very, very talented people on the other instruments, and I hope you enjoy it. Thank you.
Thank you.